Over the next few Sunday evenings, we're planning to look at some of the I am sayings of John's Gospel, the sayings Jesus gave that begin, I am the something. And there are seven of them in John's Gospel, seven I am sayings recorded for us. That doesn't mean there will be seven sermons. But does anybody know what the I am sayings are? That's a loaded question. I know some people do know. Does anybody under that height know what the I am sayings are? David, what's an I am saying? You said something first, then you said gate, then you said way, the truth, and the life. What was the first one?
The water.
The water. I don't remember that one. That's two. I am the gate, I am the way, the truth, and the life. Five more.
He did say the bread.
Did he? I missed the bread. Sorry, David. That's three. Four more. We're not giving up until we get them all. Vicky. I am the light of the world. That's another one. That's five. Is that? No, that's four. I'm losing count. We've got three to go. Hannah. Yes, I am the vine, I am the resurrection and the life. That's only one left. And I'm surprised because it's maybe one of the more well-known ones. Rob, you think you're that height. You're actually a little bit taller.
I am the good shepherd.
I am the good shepherd. It's the last one. Jesus gives these sayings, seven sayings in John's Gospel. I am the. And I think John is trying to do something maybe a bit different from the writers of the other Gospels. Show us things that they don't show us and help us in ways they don't help us. Help us to see Jesus in a slightly different way, maybe, from the writers of the other Gospels. Matthew and Mark and Luke, they tell us lots about Jesus. They teach us a lot of things. But maybe the central question in all of those Gospels, all three of them, the big question that the Gospel writers are asking is, who do you say that I am? That's at the middle of all of the Gospels, isn't it? All of those three. Who Jesus asks his disciples at about the middle point, who do you say that I am? Lots of other people, they have opinions about who Jesus is. People are saying, oh, he's Elijah, back down from heaven where Elijah went up. Or he's John the Baptist, back from the dead, back from the grave where John went down. Or he's one of the prophets, he's someone important, he's someone like Jeremiah maybe. All the other people around the disciples, they know who Jesus is and they've got their ideas about who he might be. They know he's something special. But Jesus turns to the apostles, to the people following him, the disciples, and says, how about you? Who do you say that I am? And in all of the Gospels, all of the first three, Matthew, Mark and Luke, Peter answers for the disciples, doesn't he? And he looks at Jesus and says, you are the Christ. You are the Son of God. You're the one sent from God to rule the earth and in righteousness and peace. That's who you are, Jesus. That's who we believe you are. And Matthew and Mark and Luke, writing down what happened, writing down what Jesus said and what the disciples said, they want us to see what the disciples saw, don't they? They want us to see Jesus through the eyes of the disciples, through their experiences, through their thoughts. They want us to see the things about Jesus that Peter saw, to see the things that made Peter love Jesus, that made him want to follow Jesus, that made him willing to die for Jesus, that made him serve Jesus all his life. And they want us to follow in Peter's footsteps and in the footsteps of the other disciples. They want us to see that Jesus is the Christ, that he is the Son of God. They want us to serve him the way the disciples served him. But John doesn't give us that conversation at all. He doesn't tell us about Jesus asking the disciples, okay, everyone else has got ideas, but what about you? Who do you say I am? John seems to be doing something a bit different. When we come to the I am sayings that John records to us, gives to us, I think instead of taking us on a journey with the disciples, instead of us showing us what Jesus looked like to them, looking through their eyes at Jesus, John's letting Jesus speak to us directly. If we come to read the Gospels and we ask, okay, who is this man? Who is Jesus? You know, he seems really important, even to us, 2,000 years on. Thousands, hundreds of thousands of people all over the world would say, I'm a Christian. I serve Jesus. I follow his teachings. Hundreds of thousands of people would say more than that. They'd say, Jesus is alive. He's not just some dead guy who lived thousands of years ago and who said some really wise things. He lives, and I know him. He matters. Almost everyone we meet will have heard of Jesus. Almost everyone will know something about him, even if they understand it really badly. We count our dates from his life, don't we? It's now 2017 years after Jesus was born. Give or take a few. We've miscounted a bit, I'm sure. But it's about right. And that's how everyone reckons the numbers. We count from Jesus because he's that important. And if you want to read about him, if you read the gospel accounts of Jesus, you read what he did and you read what he said, and he just seems so interesting. So you want to know a man like this. You want to know more about him. He seems so good and so wise and so kind. He never does anything cruel. He never does anything stupid. He never says anything foolish. He never does anything unpleasant, just for spite. He's not like us. He's better than us. And we want to know who he is. We want to know why he came, what he came to do. And John gives us a slightly different view on that question from Matthew and Mark and Luke. They're not disagreeing with each other, but he's just showing us a different angle. If you imagine that you've started going somewhere new, somewhere where there's already a bunch of people, and they all know each other, and they know what each other are like, and you don't really know any of them at all. New school, maybe, or a new job, or a new city, or a new church, somewhere new. And you want to know about one of the people there. What would you do? You want to know what your new teacher's like, what your new boss is like, what one of your new pastors is like. How do you find out? You talk to people, don't you? You'd ask them. You sit down at work and you turn to the guy in the desk next to you and you say, so what's it really like to work for him in the corner office over there? What's he like as a boss? What's he like day to day? You ask your co-workers, you ask your fellow students, what's that teacher like? You ask your fellow church members, so what's he like as a pastor? What's he like to talk to? And you understand the person you're interested in through the eyes of other people, don't you? You get their take on it, filtered through their experiences. But you could also ask the person himself, couldn't you? You could ask the boss, not, hi, what are you like? But you could ask him, What do you think your job is? What do you see as the big important things about managing this office, this factory, this workplace? What do you think's important about how you're going to do it? What do you think you bring to the role? You could ask him those questions and you could find out what he thinks he's like, what he thinks his job is, what he thinks about how it should be done. And you'll get a different perspective, won't you, from those two people, everybody else and the man himself. Maybe with most people you'll get a different perspective, because we all think we're better than everybody else thinks we are. But even if you take that out of the equation, nobody knows the boss like the boss knows the boss. Nobody knows the teacher like the teacher knows the teacher. Nobody else knows you like you know you, because nobody else can see inside your head. Nobody else understands everything about your internal life, everything that's going on within you and around you, because nobody else lives your life and you do. They don't know all the different struggles, all the different temptations, all the different sorrows. And nobody else understands Jesus the way that Jesus understands himself. Nobody understands how he feels except him. The disciples see a little bit of it, and they share in some of it, and they see him to be the Christ. But they don't understand everything that he understands. John maybe knew Jesus better than anybody else, maybe was closer to him than anybody. And what he is doing in his gospel is giving us an enormous privilege, isn't he? He is recording what Jesus said about himself for us. He is giving us the chance to listen to Jesus explain who he was, explain what he was like. We'd want to read all the other gospels. We'd want to read everything Jesus said and everything he did. But John gives us 7 statements straight from Jesus' own mouth. I am this. This is what I am like. This is what I came for. You want to know who Jesus is. You want to know about him. You want to know him. Listen to John. I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. I am the door. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. I am the way and the truth and the life. I am the true vine. We'll look this week at the first of those sayings, the first of the I am sayings in John's Gospel. Jesus says, I am the bread of life. And we're going to ask 3 questions about that saying, 3 questions to help us understand it, understand what Jesus meant by it, and what it means for us, and what it means for Jesus to be the bread of life. It's not the sort of thing you say every day, is it? It's not the sort of thing that's straightforward and easy to understand. First, we'll ask why Jesus said anything like it at all. Why is he even talking about bread? And second, we'll ask what he didn't mean. He says that he doesn't mean certain things when he says, I am the bread of life. And we'll talk about that. And thirdly, we'll ask, what did he mean? What actually does he mean when he says, I am the bread of life. I am the bread that came down out of heaven. First question then, 1 of 3. Why talk about bread at all? He didn't just say it out of the blue, did he? It wasn't that Jesus was there talking about something completely different to a group of people, and then he turned around and said to them, changing the subject completely, everybody, I'm the bread of life. I just thought you ought to know that. I'm the bread of life. Remember that. Write it down. There's a context to it. Jesus said this to explain something he'd just done. Most of us know the story, don't we? We didn't read it. It's earlier in John chapter 6. Jesus feeds a huge crowd with bread. He's teaching, and there is a huge crowd who come to follow him, 5,000 strong, lots and lots of people. And they're hungry. They listen to him teaching. Eventually, they need to eat. And Jesus turns to one of his disciples. He turns to a man called Philip, and he says, Philip, where are we going to find bread to feed all these people? And Philip's a bit put on the spot there, and he says, well, I don't know. I don't see any supermarkets open. I don't see anywhere to buy bread. We couldn't even afford the bread anyway. We couldn't afford bread for... It takes half a year's salary to buy just a taste of bread for all these people. It's too expensive. And they don't know what to do. But Jesus, knew exactly what he was going to do all along. And there was a small boy with this crowd, a little boy who'd brought his lunch with him, or his tea with him, not sure what time of day it is. 5 loaves and 2 fish he has. And so Jesus gets everybody sitting down, 5,000 people, sits them down in groups, gets them all quiet, and then he takes the loaves, just 5 loaves, and gives thanks for them. He prays, gives thanks to God for them, and then he starts breaking the bread and handing it round, like you would if you were trying to feed 10 people with 5 loaves, say. But something very strange happens at that point. He has these 5 loaves, he breaks them, he hands them round. But as he breaks them, as he hands them round, it just doesn't run out. There just seems to be more and more and more and more and still more and more and more and more. Just enough bread to feed 5,000 people. You pass it round and round, and no matter how far you pass it, there's still more coming down the line. And everybody eats, all 5,000, and they all eat until they're full. And they can't eat another bite. And Jesus says to his disciples, gather up the leftover fragments, take some baskets, go through this field, pick up all the bits that are left over. And they do that, and they get 12 baskets full of leftover bread out of 5 loaves at the beginning. It's a miracle, it's incredible. And everybody knows that this has happened. Everybody is extremely impressed. We'll have a free lunch club on Wednesday. Anyone can come. We'll sit round tables and we'll eat soup and rolls and melon, I think, and cake usually. Can't promise that. I don't do the catering. But let's say this coming Wednesday, Stephen is cooking the soup, as he usually is, and it's just about ready to serve, and he takes it off the hob, big pot of soup, and it just slips through his hands, and he drops it, and it goes all over the floor, and it's a complete mess. What a waste, all that soup. And out here, there are 20, 25 people sitting there waiting for soup, all hungry. And Stephen says, okay, this isn't a problem, don't worry. We have emergency soup. We have a couple of tins of Heinz soup that we always keep just in case someone doesn't like the soup we've cooked. So what we'll do is we'll crack open the tins of Heinz soup. And he gets a tin of Heinz soup, pops the top, gets a bowl, pours the soup into the bowl, puts the bowl on the counter, gets another bowl, pours soup into that bowl, bowl on the counter, there's another bowl, soup in that bowl, bowl on the counter, there's another one, some soup in there, bowl on the counter, another one, soup, counter, bowl, soup, counter, bowl, soup, counter. Until there's 25 bowls full of soup on the counter. And then there's still some soup in this. It's only a little 400 gram can of Heinz soup. So we get more bowls out the cupboard, all the bowls we've got, and we fill them all with soup out of this can. And everybody eats their fill of soup. Everybody has 2 bowls, 3 bowls of soup until they're full. This wouldn't happen. Everybody only has 1 bowl of soup ever. More's offered. No one ever takes it. But imagine that happened, and everybody saw it. Everybody who was there, we'd be amazed, wouldn't we? We'd be telling everybody we met. You'd tell your friends at school, at work, at the library, wherever you go. You'd say, you never guess what happened to me on Wednesday. It was incredible. I've never seen anything like it. It was amazing. How many people do you think would come the next Wednesday? Everybody looking at Jesus do this with the loaves. Everybody knows that this is God at work. This is incredible. This is amazing. This is not normal. And Jesus does it for a reason. Like all of his miracles, everything he did that was out of the ordinary, this is a sign. It's meant to point to something. It's meant to show something. It shows them who Jesus is. It shows them what he's come to do. John uses that word a lot, sign, doesn't he? He uses it in verse 14 of our passage. He says, the people saw the sign that Jesus had done. This thing isn't just a thing that's self-contained, not just something that you look at and leave there. It's something that points you somewhere else. It's something you follow. It's a sign. And this points to who Jesus is. It points to what he came to do. He feeds them with bread miraculously, and it shows what he is about. He has come to give people the bread that they really need. When Jesus says, "I am the bread of life," that's the background. That's why he says it. Moving on to our next two questions. What doesn't he mean? And what does he mean? First, and I think fairly quickly, what doesn't he mean? He tells us himself what he doesn't mean. After he has done this miracle, this sign, he has a long conversation with some of the people who have seen the sign of the bread being multiplied and who just haven't really understood what it points to at all. They failed to see the sign in the thing. They follow Jesus across the lake, don't they? Evening comes, the disciples cross the lake, Jesus goes somewhere else. The next day, and this is where we started reading, the crowd that was still left on the other side of the lake, they see that Jesus and the disciples are gone. They see they're not there anymore. So they hop into boats and they try to catch up with Jesus. They're looking for him. They want him. They've said things like, "This man, surely he's the great prophet that was to come into the world." They've eaten the bread he gave them. They want more. They want to know. And so they follow. And they find Jesus. And what does Jesus say to them when they find him? Jesus says, "I tell you the truth. You're seeking me not because you saw the signs. You're seeking me because you ate your fill of the loaves. I'll tell you this, don't work for the bread that perishes. Work for the bread that endures to eternal life." If next Wednesday Stephen really does find the magic soup can and keep pouring soup into the bowls, and if we all tell everybody what we saw, and if the Wednesday after that the hall is packed with 200 people all looking to see soup that just doesn't end, all looking to see a miracle, what are they there for? Why have they come? All they're looking for, most of them, is just something outward, isn't it? If we've told them it was a miracle, it was like nothing I've seen, it was extraordinary, then they'll come just wanting to see it, just because, hey, this is something new, this is something we've not seen before. A bottomless soup can, well, that's incredible. They're just looking for entertainment, for a show, for a spectacle, for something outward. And it was the same with this crowd. They were just looking for the outward stuff. They weren't really interested in seeing what the sign was pointing at. They weren't interested in thinking about who Jesus was, what he'd come to do. They just want outward things. What they want is a meal ticket, an unending meal ticket. And Jesus tells them straight, "This is not what I have come for. You are looking for bread that perishes. You're looking for food that you will eat and digest, and then you'll need more food the next day. And it's no good. You shouldn't be spending your labour for that sort of food. That's what you're striving after. That's what you're looking for. And don't. Look for bread that lasts forever. Look for eternal bread. Work for that. Strive after that." They then start talking about Moses, and they're talking about the manna in the wilderness at that point. They're saying, "Well, if you really want us to believe in you, if you want us to look at you and trust you, Jesus, then you need to give us some sign." He's just given them a sign, but they're still asking for more signs. "You need to give us some proof, some demonstration that you really are special, that you really are from God. So how about doing what Moses did for us? Moses gave us bread from heaven." And it seems that they're trying to provoke Jesus, to push him into going one up on Moses. Because what Moses did, on the face of it, was better than what Jesus had just done, wasn't it? Jesus fed a crowd of 5,000 people with bread And he did it once. Twice, but once in John's Gospel. Moses fed not 5,000 people, he fed a whole nation of people. Much more than 5,000. And he didn't just feed them once, he fed them again and again and again and again for years. And I think that's what these people are wanting. They're saying to Jesus, well, show us a sign then. Show us something like what Moses did for us. And they mean, give us bread like this, always. Keep feeding us with this physical food. Give us free food for life. I mean, that would be great, wouldn't it? You can read the political manifestos that come through your door from the Conservatives or the Labour candidate or the Lib Dem candidate, hoping for you to vote for them. And they'll promise you all sorts of things, and you know, none of it's all that serious. They're probably not going to deliver on most of what they say. If a candidate said, I will give you free food for the rest of your life, as much as you can eat, as much bread as you can eat, I'll just provide it, free of charge, completely free. That would be a real vote winner, wouldn't it? If people could trust him even a little bit, they'd vote for that. I'd vote for that. Free food, no charge. That's great. But Jesus tells this crowd, that's not what I've come to do. He could do it, but that's not what he's for. He's not just to be a meal ticket for them. So what does he mean? Our last question. He says to them, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger. Whoever believes in me shall never thirst. And he says, I am the living bread that came down out of heaven. What does he mean? Maybe to some of us those words are really, really familiar. We learned them by heart when we were children in Sunday school, and they've been with us all through our lives ever since, almost as long as we can remember. But that's just knowing them isn't the same thing as understanding them, is it? Just knowing that's what Jesus said isn't the same thing as getting it. Because on the face of it, that's what he says is just bizarre, incomprehensible. I am the living bread that came out of heaven. Eat my flesh, drink my blood. It's very odd language. What does he mean? I think two things we should understand. First, he means that we need what he's giving us. We need life, and we need it because we don't have it. Which might seem a strange thing to say. You might think, well, of course I've got life. I mean, look at me. I'm moving. My heart's beating. I can breathe. I'm alive. What are you talking about? I'm not alive. But breathing and moving and having your heart beat isn't really life, is it? That's just existing. Getting up in the morning and going to work, coming home again and turning the telly on and sitting on your sofa and eating a meal and going to bed and getting up in the morning again and going to work and on through the cycle, day after day, week after week, year after year. That's not really life, is it? That's not what it's for. That's not what it's about. We were made for more than just breathing and eating and sleeping. We were made to know God. God made us in his image, which means he made us for relationship. And first of all, more importantly than anything else, he made us to know him. He made us to have him as our Father, to talk to him, to listen to him talk to us. That's what life is about. You would think, from listening to what people say, that our generation ought to be the happiest and the most satisfied generation ever to have walked the earth, wouldn't you? People who say, you know, it's about acquiring stuff, about having pleasure, about having comfort, about having security. That's what life's really about. If that were true, we all ought to be very happy, shouldn't we? We're all pretty secure. None of us are wondering where our food's coming from tomorrow. We're maybe the richest generation ever, at least those of us who live in the West. We have so much stuff. We have food to spare. Tons of food gets thrown in the bin every day just because people don't fancy it at the moment. We have entertainment on tap, don't we? We have everything you could want to amuse yourself. Satellite TV, multi-million pound industries, Hollywood films, Premier League football, just to keep us happy, just to keep us smiling and amused. We have clothes, wardrobes of clothes, more than we can wear. We have gadgets, all sorts of them. We have cars. We have roads. We have streetlights. We have things that previous generations could only have dreamed of. But does it satisfy us? Does it make us happy? Is that what life's about? Is that what we're for? Has it made us content? Just to ask the question is to answer it, isn't it? Of course it hasn't. Of course that hasn't made anybody happy. If anything, it's made people miserable. We're dissatisfied. We're unhappy. We're restless. People are always looking for more, always looking for something else, something that will really satisfy. The things of this world, the bread, in the end, it's all empty. God has put eternity in our hearts, someone once said. He has made us for himself. And we're never going to be at rest until we find him, until we find our rest in him. He's given us a longing for something permanent, something that lasts, something beyond ourselves, something more than what we can see and hear around us. And when Jesus says, "I am the bread of life," he means that without him, there isn't really any point to anything we do. We're just dead people walking around. We live and breathe, but we're like zombies. We just sort of shuffle around endlessly without any meaning, without any purpose, without any goal, without any real life at all. We need what he has to offer. We need it like we need bread. Bread was just the staple food for the people Jesus is talking to, wasn't it? We might not think bread's such a big deal because we have so much else to eat. If we don't have bread, we can eat cake or something else. But for these people, they know what Jesus means. They know that bread they need in order to live. If they don't get their bread, they will die. And Jesus says, "I am the bread. I'm the bread that gives you life. I'm the bread you need. You will die if you don't have me." And so will we. If you ignore Jesus, if you just don't really want to know about him, don't want to understand what he came for, what he's like, if you just want to live your life without really knowing him, earn your money, spend the money on yourself and your own pleasures, if that's what you want, then one day it comes to an end, doesn't it? One day you grow old and then you die. And you'll realise then that you've never really lived in the first place. Your life's just been a merry-go-round, meaningless, twirly round and round and round, and then eventually you stop and the ride's over and you're no further ahead than you were when you got on all those years ago. Without Jesus, life isn't real at all. He means that. He means we need him and we die without him. And secondly, he means that he is the life we need. Maybe the obvious question is, in what sense is Jesus the bread of life when he says, "I am the bread of life"? How is he the bread of life? And he tells us himself. We read it. He says, "The bread he gives to the world is his flesh." He says, "Unless you eat his flesh and drink his blood, unless you take him to be your food and your drink, unless you live on him, take him for life and satisfaction and fullness, then you'll never have life or satisfaction or fullness. You'll only have emptiness." He says, "I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness. They had their fill of physical bread and they all died. This is the bread that comes down from heaven. You can eat of this and not die. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. If anyone eats this bread, he will live forever. The bread I give for the life of the world is my flesh." When Jesus says, "I am the bread of life," He means you need me. And he doesn't mean you just need to follow my teaching, does he? He doesn't mean you need my words, you need the things that I'm going to tell you. You need to follow the way I tell you to go, obey my commands. We should do that, and we do need that, but that's not what he's talking about. He doesn't say the way to get life is to listen, to hear me, and to do what I say. He says the way to get life is to eat me, consume me. I am the bread of life. The way to get life is to live on me. I am the living bread that came down from God. And the bread I gave for the life of the world is my flesh, my body. Jesus is talking about his death, isn't he? He's looking forward to the time when he will die, when he will give up his body, when it will be broken like the bread was broken. The bread I give for the life of the world is my flesh, it is my body. He gives up his flesh as a sacrifice. He gives it up to pay for the sins, all the sins of all his people. Real life, what life is about, is knowing God and knowing that God is for you, knowing that you are a child of God, that you are his son, that he loves you, knowing that all your sins are forgiven, that there's not a thing on your record, there is nothing between you and God, nothing to stop you knowing him and loving him. That's what life is. Knowing that nothing can separate you from his love. Knowing that when you die, you will go to be in heaven with him. That hell is not your home, heaven is. That's what life is. And the way to have it, Jesus says, is to take him as your food. To take him as the thing you really need. The thing you cannot do without. Take his body, take that sacrifice. And trust it with a life and death trust. Live on it, eat it, make it the thing that matters. I guess most of us here would say, I've done that. That is me. I'm a believer in Jesus Christ. I have taken him as the thing I really need. I am trusting in him. I am, my life is submerged into his. I live for him. But believers still need to hear this, don't we? It must be true of every Christian on the whole face of the planet that at times we're tempted to look for life elsewhere. We're tempted to look to other things other than Jesus Christ for life and happiness and satisfaction and fullness and contentment. We raise up idols, whatever those idols are, and we hope that maybe we'll find some happiness, some joy in those things. And we need to hear these words. We need to hear Jesus telling us he is the bread. He is the living bread. He came to bring us life. There was a moment for every believer when we first got that life from Jesus, when we first started to feed on him. But feeding is an ongoing thing, isn't it? It's not something you just start doing and then do once just for a day and then that will do you for the rest of your life. You can go 50, 60 years in the strength of that one meal. It's not like that. We need to eat. We need to feed daily. We need to look at Jesus Christ and feed on him, take him for ourselves again and again and again. And then some here aren't believers. Some never have come to Jesus Christ and trusted him that way. Never have taken him for themselves, fed on him, lived on him. And if that's you, look at his words here. He says, whoever comes to me won't hunger. Whoever believes in me shall never thirst. If you come to Jesus Christ, if you come to take him as what you need, to take him for life and strength and wholeness, you have his assurance, you have his personal guarantee that you will not be turned away, that you will have what you are looking for. Whoever comes to me, he says.